It's a strange and unusual music odyssey. Flying monkeys, scarecrows, jokers, and even midday tokers. Oh, this ain't your normal musical, man. It's a far-out psychedelic trip into the mind of the mad. This is going to be one wild and crazy musical event. Alice, Trip and Sixes, Thursday, March 31st at 10 p.m. on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Andy Warhol looks at screen. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Vanessa Rennick, an artist whose installation Next Level Effed Up is on now at the Portland Art Museum in the Apex Space through July 17th, and Dana Lynn Lewis, who has three pieces in the Contemporary Northwest Artists Award Show, which are visible through May the 8th. Thanks for coming into KBOO.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me here.
Vanessa, your piece is in the Apex Space. It's on the fourth floor of the Hoffman Wing with the Northwest artists, correct?
Yes.
And you go in, there's a pile of TVs, 13 old school TVs.
Commodore 64 monitors.
And some beanbags, skylight with a red tint to it and a big red light and a projection on one wall. Just tell us, what's the idea of calling it Next Level Effed Up? Because that does come up a lot in the conversations in the video.
Well, the piece came into my head 2 years ago when I was having dinner with the artist Corey Arnold. We were complaining about many different things going on in the world. And then I asked him about a photo he posted on his website, and he explained it to me. I came up with the phrase, that is Next Level Effed Up. And right then I decided that I should make a video installation with many different subject matters in it that pertain to effed upness in our moment in time right now, since it seems to be escalating and we are surrounded by it, especially in Portland with so much change going on. Think of the subject matter, the piece could be endless, and I really had to hone it in. There's many subjects that I did not put into the piece, so that's where the idea came from.
Mm-hmm. In the main video, you're interviewing people and they're telling you stories, or they're driving around showing you things like architecture or animals. And then there are other videos going on which are silent, and they seem to be illustrating the stories that they're telling.
One of them ties into when we're driving around Portland, but the other loops are about different effed up things that didn't need sound to them for us to understand them, like Elephants in Captivity, which is a loop that Colleen Plum made and put into my piece. There's a loop of people walking their dogs and picking up their poop with a plastic bag and then leaving it on the side of the sidewalk or trail, which happens all the time. And mm-hmm. I always come across those bags and I'm like, who does this? Why would you pick it up? It's a mystery. There's cats killing birds, since cats are responsible for billions of birds and mammals killed each year, and even up to, I think, 33 extinctions in birds. There's a loop of demolitions in Portland, which I pulled off the PortlandChronicle.com website, and also trees, habitat, not just for humans getting lost in Portland, but also for all sorts of other animals that are not human, and insects. And then there's a loop that I call a hodgepodge of horrors that has mountaintop removal and Fukushima, Katrina, forest fires, Martin Shkreli, migraines, the Uncle Sam billboard that's on I-5 up by Chehalis. I'm forgetting one more thing on there. There's another loop, too. I need to
get my diagram. Are they all connected? Are you saying effed upness is caused by humans?
A lot of effed upness is caused by humans, yes. I guess I am saying that.
Explain the bit about the animal poop. This is people bag it and then they throw it down on the ground.
Yeah, they just, I don't know why they would go to the trouble of picking it up and putting it in a plastic bag and tying it in a knot and then leaving it on the side of the forest trail or on the sidewalk or in the gutter. It's a mystery to me.
How did you go about making a video about it?
I stalked some friends with their dogs on a walk. I was like, make sure to feed them a lot before we start. And it's kind of funny because if you look at the dogs, they're all pooping, and they, for a second, they look at me like, why are you videotaping me?
They're acting, right? These are
They're
your
acting.
Friends.
Yeah, yeah. Those are friends acting. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was outside Vanessa's house a couple weeks ago looking at a house that is part of the effed up situation in Portland, because there's no way an artist could afford the house across the street from Vanessa now. And it used to be all artists in that neighborhood. And it's sort of...
Where's that?
Lots of different people in that neighborhood, but a more diverse population in inner northeast.
And Sabin neighborhood.
Sabin. I won't go into that right now, but... Vanessa was telling me about different things that are coming up in the video, and we were talking about the dog poop bags. And, you know, they're in all different colors, too. They're like make you feel good about picking up your dog poop. And but you should feel so good that you should take it home and put it in your own can.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, we had this talk. We talked about lots of things. And then I went home, and there were like three bags at my steps of my house.
Really?
Yeah. I live across the street from Colonel Summers Park, and three bags just at the steps. Like, here you go. And it's not the only time I've seen it. It's all over the place.
I'd like to say also that this is a humorous loop to me, and that this piece is heavy, but it's also very, very funny. And because I feel like if you just hit people over the head with serious subject matter, it's going to be too dark, and they're not going to want to sit through it. And with this piece... invites you to sit through it more than one of the cycles, which is 14 minutes long, since there's so many other channels that you can look at and see different images that you didn't see the first time around. And so the four main stories that are going through the loop all have humor to them. And I commissioned the artist, musician Sam Coombs, who's in the band Quasi and who I've worked with on many of my films, to create some choruses with different musical arrangements of him singing Next Level Effed Up. And so they punctuate these stories, and they definitely, it almost sounds like a clown car in this sad way, but it brings, there's a lot of humor in the piece. So it's not just one big giant downer. Mm-hmm. And it ends on a very funny note as well.
Which is what?
Well, after these stories all happen, a large projection comes on next to the mountain of televisions, and it's of the Painted Hills, and it's bringing
in
us
Eastern Oregon.
In Eastern Oregon, yes, and it talks about how 70 million years ago the hills, well, all of Oregon was under the ocean, and trying to bring us out from this moment of where we're just like totally focused on the moment of now of upness of where we are, and bring us into the idea of what time is and what reality is. And the audio from the full-on double rainbow guy, Paul Vasquez, comes in, tripping his brains out and laughing and having his mind blown by nature. And Marisa Anderson has an incredible guitar score underneath this part. And it's very beautiful and soothing and relaxing and joyous.
Mm-hmm. The double rainbow guy says, what does he say?
He says a lot, but I didn't put everything
off.
He says in my video.
But in the installation,
he says, tell me what it means. What does it mean?
Do you find that to be a common refrain then around the art world? People still trying to ask you what things mean?
Or I'm thinking also of myself, just... more philosophical about what does our life mean, and not just art. What does art mean? And when you go way out to thinking about 70 million years ago, this was all under the ocean. It just puts a different balance or place pinpoint of where you are at that moment. And so I'm just trying to broaden people's minds into thinking, what does it mean?
Did you structure it at all? As you were putting it together, did you think globally, act locally, or the reverse? Did you pick and choose some things you'd already shot? Did you
I remembered the other thing on the Hodgepodge of Horrors. It's or maybe I said that, the mountaintop removal.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a mix of super local, like the dog poop bags, and then all the way over to the nuclear disaster in Japan happening. Although a lot of the piece does focus on things in the more northwest area. Mm-hmm. I wanted to say, too, when you were describing it at the beginning, of this radio show, you said the red tinted windows. There's also a black airplane flying through the sky, the red sky, that's pulling a banner that says Next Level Effed Up in mm-hmm. it.
Why do you have that advertising?
I like the idea. I think I came up with the idea recently, maybe 2 months ago. There was a rally in LA and there was some plane flew over it, a political rally, and they had an anti-Trump banner. And then it sparked the inkling in my head to make a banner of the title of the show in the sky. And mm-hmm. also, if you look at the windows closely, first I was going to have them washed because they were really filthy. But then when the red film went up over the windows, it really accentuated the dirt on the windows. Mm-hmm. And I thought, in a way, it's also commenting on the air quality problems that have come to light in Portland at this very moment, mm-hmm. which are effed up.
Right. Quite a surprise for a lot of people who live in, you know, bucolic southeast Portland.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you structure it? Once you got the commission, was it work based on a commission, or was it work you were doing anyway?
No, it was. I was offered to do whatever I wanted to in that space. Mm-hmm. And I have many ideas that I am thinking about constantly making and researching. And when somebody gives me a space or a deadline, it definitely makes me think about which one I should do. And that's how it came about. Also, there's a section on the monitors with Michael Hurley singing a song that he wrote about Monsanto. And that also, he's just a beautiful man singing in the most beautiful voice this song he wrote about the horrors of Monsanto. So in a way, it ties in really well with my piece, with bringing the humor in and just presenting facts. It's definitely a documentary piece, although it is an art installation. But everything in it, even if it was recreated, it is from something real that I overheard or experienced or learned about. And it's presented as art, which I like to do with science and facts, because I feel like a lot of times if you're just watching the normal PC documentary, it doesn't make you think in a different way or open up your brain to looking at things in a different way that presenting it through a video installation can do.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a lot of footage already, or did you go out and make it all?
No, I shot. That was all done within the 6 weeks before this show.
Oh, okay. It's quite a short time frame.
That's how I always work. I think a lot and research a lot. And then, sometimes I have footage from another time. That's not true. But I usually wait till very close to the deadline and then work like an insane person and pull it together.
Right. Right.
And it's super fresh because of that. I love that about your work.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very up-to-the-minute piece.
Mm-hmm. But you had more than 6 weeks, right? Presumably Portland Art Museum gives you a year or something.
Yeah, but I've been thinking about it and researching and coming up with ideas. Like I was on this 5-week, 10,000-mile road trip showing my films in the fall, and I shot something on there for it, and I was constantly, because I had hours and hours every day I was driving mm-hmm. with nobody else in my vehicle, and I was thinking about the piece constantly during those 5 weeks, which was great.
Are you still driving a van?
I am still driving
the
that
same
van.
Van?
It's got 434,000 miles on the original engine.
VW?
That's great. Toyota 87.
Yay.
Oh, okay. That's amazing.
It is. The root beer float.
So you still take that out to bring your work to cinemas around the country?
Not just cinemas. I went to art museums and teeny little churches and Grange halls and universities. I actually did not go to that many cinemas on this trip. And I went to 35 different places on this trip, all the way to Portland, Maine, down to Tennessee, up to Minneapolis and back.
Mm-hmm. Is the idea that you still have to bring equipment and stuff with you, or could it all be done?
This was the first
remotely tour.
I went with just a laptop and a hard drive, so it seemed a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. How does that work?
Because most people have projectors now and sound systems, where 10 years ago most people did not have projectors, so it's a lot easier or they, if they don't have a projector, like some of the places did, they could borrow one from someone.
So does that give you a lot more time? You show up and you don't have to mess
yes.
around with equipment?
Yeah.
So what do you do with all that extra time?
I drive.
Oh, you just drive more?
Yeah, I just, yeah. I did a show every single day, except for 3 days in 5.5 weeks. So, every show was in a different city. Sometimes there were two shows in two different cities in one day. So I'm just constantly driving, and luckily I had no breakdowns and was able to be everywhere on time.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Vanessa Rennick. Her show Next Level Effed Up is at the Portland Art Museum through July 17th. And Dana Lynn Lewis, who has three pieces in the Contemporary Northwest Artists Award Show through May the 8th. So Dana, tell us how these three pieces, the two in the gallery in the art museum are called Clearing Number 6 and Oscillation.
Mm-hmm.
How are they different from the work at Merrillhurst from...
You mean Lewis and Clark?
Oh, yeah, sorry, Lewis and Clark.
That's okay.
About 18 months ago?
Uh-huh. Well, Bonnie asked me to be in the show about... Around that time, Bonnie asked me to be in the Northwest Artists Awards show, and we had extra time, and she said, you know, this isn't really about... fresh work necessarily, you can, you know, it's about the history of your work and you don't necessarily have to do anything new. And she was also curious about if I could replicate or reproduce one of the installations that was in that show, and that's Clearing, the room with all the mirrors and the drawings on the walls.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, okay, I can do that, but I also want to do some new work, which I've been working on. I have another show at a museum up north right now, so I've been working on a lot of different things. And in general, I try to create spaces that provide a sense of levity for people during this really super difficult time, both, you know, at home and personally and globally in our world, which everything just keeps happening and coming at us every day. And so the thing, that's sort of the thread that ties them together. And then also create a sense of magic. The piece outside Filament is a drawing that is on the pavement, and that came out of that. Actually, Lewis and Clark was at the Lewis and Clark show. I did a couple still projections of drawings, and I wanted to like take that to the next level, and I wanted people to be engaged or invited into the process of drawing, and which is a very kind of spontaneous and meditative thing for me. So I did these drawings live, and this really great guy in town who's a filmmaker and artist, Carl Sweets, filmed me doing those drawings, and then we switched them into white light because I wanted it to be this white light that appeared on the ground. And so there's about 30...
Sorry, what do you mean switched it into white light?
It was black drawings that were produced on vellum, sort of... vertically in space.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we took it into the production, we changed it into white so that they appear to be this white light on the ground that's glowing, and the drawings draw and undraw themselves, and they're about 30 feet in diameter between the Mark Building and the Portland Art Museum, so where people wait in line for the mm-hmm. film center or go.
I've been out there for film shows and come across people that notice it, and it's so great to see their joy engagement and excitement and getting drawn into it, and then standing within the projection and having your drawing be on them.
Oh,
and
good.
It really works well.
Oh, thanks.
Are they abstract drawings?
Yes.
They
very much relate to the other drawings that mm-hmm. are inside.
So kind of loops and ellipses and...
Yeah, and these, it's sort of... I feel like everybody sees this, but I'm not sure if that's true. So when I'm falling asleep, these kind of line drawings, these like floaters in my eyeballs kind of, do you see that? Do you guys see
occasionally
that?
Occasionally, I try and ignore it.
So, but it happens, right? So I kind of like, I zone into those spaces and then I sort of collect that information, and I feel like those drawings relate to that. Also, during different states of meditation, those drawings appear to me. And I don't sit there and draw them in a sketchbook. I just kind of collect them, and then I sort of go into that space again when Carl and I were working together on this project. We spent a lot of time, many hours, and we did, I don't know, I think more than 100 drawings. There's, I think, about 30 that are in filament, which is the projection at the Art Museum. Mm-hmm. I wanted to create something that, the Art Museum's expensive, you know, and not everybody has access.
$19.99 now.
Right, and not everybody has access to it, and I wanted to create something that would magically appear to somebody who was on their way to Safeway, and or as well as somebody coming out of the Schnitz after a concert. And so it runs Tuesday through Sunday from dark until, because dark is changing now, until 11:30 at night. And I've been there a few times in and around, like running around on my bicycle or having dinner with friends or whatever, and I've stopped by there and seen, and it's fun to watch people with it, children and dogs in particular.
You did it at Lewis and Clark, I remember, and then...
No, I didn't do that at Lewis and Clark.
You did have projections outside.
Yeah, so the projection outside at Lewis and Clark was still.
Yeah.
Right, and that was actually what inspired me, because I was sort of up, I was up watching them from above, and I would see them dancing in it and playing in it and kissing in it, and I thought, I like what they're doing with that, and I want to figure out a way to play with them. Mm-hmm. So that's where it became a motion piece.
Right. So by animating it, it attracts attention.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the two pieces inside are called, so clearing number 6 is, as you go in to the show, it's on the left. It's a 3-wall kind of compartment, brown walls, lots of mirrors, round and oval mirrors with white kind of, what is that white line?
It's paint on the mirror.
White paint.
Yeah, and that mirror, that room is, you know, it's the tangle room. It's all about sort of the tangling and untangling of our inner and outer spirits, ourselves, and how that relates to the world. And I'm an abstract artist for very specific reason. So it's not like I write a book about it or I tell you exactly what's all going on there, because I really like to see and feel what other people are getting from it. Like I said, you know, I see these things when I go to sleep at night. But if I said, don't you see these things? And then maybe people say, oh, I don't see those things. I don't have access to it. So I would say loosely that piece is about the tangling and untangling of ourselves, our relationships, our emotions, and our connections to the world. The glass piece, the physical manifestation of the tangle, is the glass piece that's floating on a mirror in the installation. And then there's intentionally light spotted on that, and then it shoots shadows above and below it and around the room a little bit. And I wanted to create, like I said, the physical manifestation of that tangle experience. And I did that at the Tacoma Art Museum with the gaffers there on a residency.
Is it meant to be an environment? Did you say, I want this corner?
I wanted the size of the space.
Yeah.
Bonnie is pretty amazing. There's a lot of work in that show. There's 7 of us. Most of the people in that show do pretty big work. Bonnie Malcolmson, she did an incredible job designing that show. I think it works really well. Sometimes group shows are really hard. They're hard to be in, or they're hard for the curators to figure out how to make them work.
Why are they hard to be in?
Well, sometimes you're not necessarily all excited about the other work that's in the show. I am excited about this show. Mm-hmm. But also it's kind of like, especially if you're an installation-oriented artist, I think about like what's around it, and I want to kind of envelop people and then, for example, Victoria Havens, she's got this wonderful wall of words, mm-hmm. and it's actually, I have in the oscillation piece, there's a glass tent that has mirrored drawings all over it. And so Victoria Haven's words show up in my glass tent. And so I like that. I like how that comes together. But if I wasn't so interested in that work and it showed up in my work, mm-hmm. it would be harder. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's sort of the group show thing.
So you've got two corners, really. Mm-hmm. Your other piece, Oscillation, mm-hmm. It looks like strings of pearls, sort of, they're glass balloons.
Yeah, they're glass prayer beads made out of breath.
Made out of breath?
Yeah.
Oh, there's breath inside
they're blown.
The glass.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they're in big garlands What else is in there?
There's also a gold wall with a drawing, a very intricate drawing of this prayer bead thing that I've been working on. And then this big glass tent that's wrapped in some similar imagery, but also has this mirror drawing in it that you're drawn in physically, drawn into the beads because you're seeing your reflection in them. So I've been getting a lot of emails and Facebooks and texts from people with their faces in it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're really sort of engaged in it. It's about the size of a human. And it floats from the ceiling as well. And I wanted you to imagine that you could potentially be inside of it, but then you're also literally drawn inside of it with the mirror thing.
Mm-hmm. So the beads are like the mirror removed, is that right? Or the mirror
yes.
applied?
Mirror. The glass was all mirrored, and then I put a film on it and then had that blasted away. So the drawing is the mirrored part.
Right.
Instead of the reverse.
So what are people doing? Taking pictures of themselves?
Yeah. Actually, there's a lot of selfies going on. People are actually, like, some of the mirrors are in the darker room that you described are flying off the wall because people are backing up into it and taking selfies, and then I get these calls. It's funny because I don't look at the mirrors.
Do you care?
Do I care that they're breaking?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it's interesting because it was at Lewis and Clark we don't have to put this on the radio.
Okay.
I mean, it was at Lewis and Clark for 3 months, and it wasn't, and they don't have any guards, and there wasn't any breaking.
Oh, okay, so a different crowd.
Yeah, I think you know they say students are going to break stuff, you know, and then you're at the museum where everything's like, and anyway.
You can say that.
I don't know.
All right, I'll just say it again then.
Okay.
So people have been bumping into them and breaking them. Do you care?
Yeah, I do care. I think people could be a little bit more careful. But also, I want people to be in there. I don't want there to be a black line around the wall so you don't get close to it.
Do you have another piece that you were going to use in this?
I have another show right now at the Museum of the San Juans in Friday Harbor. I was working on both these shows at the same time. There are some similarities between them, some similar things going on. I think it's kind of interesting that Vanessa and I are in the museum at the same time right now because she illustrates in this wonderful way what's going on in the world with her own sense of levity, but also stick it to you, a lot of really strong and serious and important attitude around it. If people are really going through the whole museum and they're having experience, they might sort of counteract that experience with the experience that I'm trying to create, which is this sense of levity in this difficult time.
Mm-hmm.
And the show up north, there's two other one-person shows going on right now up north, too. One is Goya, and the other one is Ai Weiwei. And I'm having this experience where I'm hearing from the director, Ian Boyden, that, you know, the Ai Weiwei show, which I think would maybe have some similar, you know, reactions and feelings that people would if they encounter some of the imagery and ideas that Vanessa's dealing with. And, you know, it's extremely powerful. And then they have another experience, a completely different experience when they engage my work. And they kind of interact with each other in this way that I'm really excited about.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that, Vanessa?
Oh, yeah. I actually posted on Facebook yesterday that there's so many good shows in the museum right now that it's great to be included at the Portland Art Museum. Sometimes you're somewhere and, like Dana was saying, you just don't jive with some of the other art that's in the space. Like yesterday, I was walking down the stairs away, and then I got pulled in to look at something, and I was like, wow, this is blowing my mind. And on June 9th, the Film Center's going to have a screening of The Cream of the Crop of my films, and the museum will also be open, and you can get in to both the screening and to view the installation for the same price. There's many, many great shows, and it's an honor to be included at this time. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I agree.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week were Vanessa Rennick. Her show, Next Level Effed Up, it's not really called that, is on at the Portland Art Museum through July 17th in the Apex space. And Dana Lynn Lewis, whose three pieces are at the Portland Art Museum as part of the Contemporary Northwest Artists Awards show through May the 8th. Thanks very much for coming into KBOO.
Thank you, Joseph. Thanks for asking us.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall.
KABOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Tim DeChristopher Lecture, Wielding the Power of Vulnerability, Thursday, April 7th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Tim DeChristopher, as bidder 70, disrupted a Bureau of Land Management oil and gas auction in 2008 by outbidding oil companies for land parcels around Arches and Canyonlands National Parks in Utah. His actions led to a 21-month imprisonment. Again, that's a lecture by Tim DeChristopher titled Wielding the Power of Vulnerability, Thursday, April 7th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KABOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Smoldering Fires, produced by Passenart. The play runs from March 11th through April 10th at the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center in Portland. Smoldering Fires explores how to apply the ideas and struggles of the civil rights movement to contemporary city life through the point of view of two young friends who differ in temperament and approach. Again, that's Smoldering Fires, March 11th through April 10th at the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center, 5340 Northeast Interstate Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Buenas tardes.